Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you don't plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get at is this podcast will include all kinds of spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. This episode, I'll be discussing Sea Monster. Sea Monster is a poem I published early in 2017 with Yes Poetry. This is a prose poem that centers on speculating on what would happen if my wife Heather were to get pregnant. At the time I'm recording this, we are not and have not been pregnant. I'm certainly open to the idea of that happening between the recording and when this is actually released, but that's not a reality. So this is in some ways a poem that has elements of the autobiographical certainly embedded into it, but is largely fictive in nature, or at least kind of speculating about a future experience or a hypothetical experience. This poem, I kind of came up with the idea for it. I've been reading Matthew Gavin Frank's book, Preparing the Ghost, which is a really interesting nonfiction work. It's kind of a book-length essay where Frank kind of just kind of meditates on his relationship with his grandfather and other men and kind of his experience working and the history of the specific region of the country. But all kind of centers around and all kind of comes back to this idea of the giant squid and kind of the mythology around this creature, as well as actual research and kind of, you know, what it was and actual sightings of the giant squid and so on and so forth. I think it's a really interesting book. I think it's a really great book, in part for how well it works despite seeming kind of at a superficial glance just so kind of bizarre and out there in terms of the concepts that it brings together, but to still be a really accessible, I think really enjoyable read. I think it's a real tribute to his talent. But anyway, it got me on this wavelength of thinking about, you know, deep sea creatures, you know, specifically a giant squid. And I've always been interested in kind of this idea of creatures that exist in the deepest part of the ocean. And in particular, this idea that there are these enormous creatures there and ones that, you know, we have never seen just given how far down they may be. So I don't know, I've always been sort of interested in that. And then I was thinking about kind of the way in which a child is unseen too, and how, you know, when they're in their mother's stomach, how there is some overlap with that experience of being in the deep sea, of just there being no light, or not even the concept of light. You know, these creatures down there, you know, some of them are bioluminescent, they can generate light, or, you know, may have been in, you know, more shallow waters, but a lot of the creatures that live down there may just have had no experience with light, even not even a concept of it. And thinking about, you know, a child who's had, you know, no experience with anything, as they're still forming, they're not even a person yet. So, you know, I was thinking about that idea, you know, and Heather and I have been, you know, talking about what will happen when the time comes when we have children and, you know, wanting to do that. So this poem ended up being largely a meditation on all of that, sort of on how we'd approach, you know, pregnancy and parenthood and what we'd want. It got me researching some of the physical elements of pregnancy. And what it all came back to, though, was just the idea of unconditional love, and how however a child might come out, just the sheer concept that, you know, that child is a part of us at that point. And I think this is true of, you know, whether it's a child by birth or by adoption or, you know, by any other means, you know, just kind of the connection between parents and child is just this kind of an indelible kind of connection between them. You know, I know different people have different connections with their parents. I know I have my own complications with my own relationship with my parents, but I think it's pretty interesting to think about, though, in terms of just kind of the relationships that are kind of inherent and how they evolve over time. So I ultimately found a home for this poem with Yes Poetry, which is an online journal edited by Joanna Valente. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But it's a journal that features a lot of kind of edgier, kind of weirder work. It's skewed political in recent years, but in general, just kind of and a kind of out there magazine, which I think was a really good fit for a poem like Sea Monster. So as I've been doing with a lot of the poems that I discuss on this podcast, you know, given kind of the brevity of the form, and given kind of some of the oral qualities, I think that the poems, just at least some of the ones that I read, I like to think sort of take on. I thought it'd be worthwhile to go ahead and read the poem as part of the podcast. So this is Sea Monster. When your mother's stomach moves, that contortion and throbbing from within, I know what neither of us have admitted aloud, that you are a deep sea monster. Childhood visions of what it must have looked like inside my mother, red blood cells floating, and all those vital organs churning and contracting. But that isn't right, for inside the body, only so much light can peek through, and no light at all to that inner, most protected space where you wait. You do not know sight. I might liken you to some small, benign creature merely existing in blackness. But you kick. You are not peaceful. You grow. Unchecked, you might know no bounds. A giant spider crab with 12-foot legs, a 30-foot giant squid. Scientists don't know for sure why these creatures that grow deeper grow larger. Again, I revisit childhood visions. The sureness that in darkness any nightmare might come true. But who can blame you for wishing to escape not only this darkness, but the jagged terrain of your mother's skeletal structure? Like life on the bottom of the ocean, every movement is treacherous, promising you will be scraped or impaled. That sensation, the entire smell of the world, is encapsulated in those innards, coupled with the prospect that there could, perhaps, be some softness somewhere beyond these walls. And there is the matter of food, of sucking off of your mother's pre-digested stores. The doctor says you can taste now, just starting to differentiate between different forms of pre-digested pulp and sludge, greedy for more and more and more and more and more. Taste, perhaps your best defined sense, not unlike fish with taste buds throughout and outside their mouths, a body devoted to flavor. I wonder if you hear us, really. The Tori Amos songs your mother plays through oversized headphones clamped to 2 points on her distended belly. Our conversations, our arguments about how we'll raise you. Our fears, equal parts about what it would mean to lose you and what it would mean for you to outlive us both. Our hopes you might represent the best pieces of us, our wondering about whether you'll like the outdoors and to read and to sing, about whether you'll take to swimming. Our sea monster, our blood, we love you unconditionally. Okay, so that was Sea Monster. So now we're going to move along to Mike's monthly endorsement. So as an artist, I do think it's important to be consuming other things, to see what interests and inspires you and see what's already out there and see what's come before you. So at the end of episodes, I'm recommending a book, story, movie, TV show, band, wrestling match, etc. That may have escaped a huge mainstream audience or that may be a little dated now and at the cusp of being forgotten, but that I nonetheless recommend. So in this case, I'm recommending sort of a hybrid of a few of the categories I mentioned there. It's an article that ESPN published in March 2017, and it's an oral history of Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage. So for those who are wrestling fans, you can definitely key in here. I'm sure you already know the match I'm talking about from WrestleMania 3. For those who are not wrestling fans, this is probably your entry point or your exit point, excuse me, for the podcast, because this is going to get into wrestling talk here. So in any event, for people who are still listening now, you're probably familiar with this match. It's a very famous one. It happened at WrestleMania 3, which was headlined by Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant, which was a super iconic match, a big draw, and the biggest reason why the WWF at the time was able to get allegedly over 90,000 people crammed into the Pontiac Silverdome in Michigan. But the match between Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage has kind of taken on a mythology of its own, in part because it was just a great match, and in a style that the WWF wasn't really doing at the time. Usually they were kind of gravitating more towards larger-than-life characters and storylines and kind of letting actual athleticism and match quality kind of fall by the wayside. But this was a really... you know, great demonstration in the ring of kind of athleticism and storytelling and kind of progressing from different technical moves and different kind of false finishes where it looked like the match would end and then dramatically it continued. You know, it's relatively common knowledge among wrestling fans that one of the participants, Randy Savage, had a real tendency to pre-plan all of his matches and to, you know, kind of meticulously plot out what would happen at every given stage, to the point that drove a lot of guys nuts, because a lot of wrestlers are much more into having, you know, the outcome of the match known, but beyond that... kind of feeding off the crowd and kind of feeding off what feels organic as they're in progress. The oral history, I think it's just fascinating. I knew pieces of that Savage had, you know, planned it out, and that Steamboat was kind of driven nuts, you know, by the fact that Savage was so insistent on planning everything out. Really interesting to read, though. I actually learned a lot in reading this article about kind of the degree to which they collaborated. You know, Savage kind of mapped out the match, and then Steamboat and Savage would, for months leading up to it, go over the outline and quiz each other. And there were over 100 moves kind of sequenced out that they had the whole thing memorized, you know, what would happen from point to point, and they would give each other pop quizzes in the locker room to kind of make sure they were both learning it and remembering what they were supposed to do. Another part that's fascinating, I think, about this article is it talks about how the match kind of ruined Randy Savage, where he felt that was kind of his masterpiece, and he wanted to, you know, to reach that pinnacle again and wanted to exceed that one more time in his career. And never really felt like he accomplished that, which I think has a lot to say just kind of from any artist's perspective. And I know that for a lot of you who might still be listening, but who you aren't necessarily wrestling fans, that might sound kind of ridiculous, this idea that I'm categorizing wrestlers as artists. And for some of them, I think that would be kind of ridiculous. But for Savage, I think it actually is a pretty fair way of assessing him. I think that's kind of what he was. All right. Well, enough talk about that. So again, you can find that if you Google Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage oral history. The author is Brian Campbell, who assembled all the pieces for that. But it was published again through ESPN in 2017. All right. Well, I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope you will check back again. Special thanks, as always, go to Mike Peek for providing the theme music for this show. That's all for this time. I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity. And I'll catch you next time.